Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, baby, we started to burn too many things we found. That's the divine Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger, the legend, the real, the truly amazing Pete Seeger, who also wrote Turn, 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 by the way. And if you've heard the Byrds version, I never knew the Pete actually wrote that thing until many, many, many years later. And David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back with you for another hour here in the Green Powered Wellness Show in Solartopia at PRN. Thank you to the crew in New York. Always a pleasure, always an honor to be with you guys. And we got a killer show today. We are going to talk about, as we have before, and, you know, I have a certain group of guests that are of truly spectacular importance and worth, and one of them is John Brakey, who's with us today. John, you on?
I certainly am, Harvey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? And where are you, buddy?
I'm in Tucson right now. Yeah. Tucson. But my heart's
in
Florida.
Your heart's in Florida. Wasn't that a Tony Bennett song?
I guess it might be. I think it was San Francisco or something.
I left my heart in God's waiting room. And we're going to talk about a very, very important court case that you are involved in. And this whole show is going to be devoted to voter rights and the hope that we can get a decent vote count. I have also invited Steve Rosenfeld. Steve, are you on?
Yeah, hi.
Hey, buddy, how are you? And where are you? You're in San Francisco, right?
I'm in San Francisco.
And your heart is still there with Tony Bennett. And I've also invited Bob Fitrakis, to join us at the top of the hour. He can't stay for the full time. Bob, have you called in yet? All right, Bob's running around. So if he calls in, there are a couple things. This is a very specific and focused and important situation that we're going to deal with here, which is the ballot images. I know, Steve, you're involved in a dialogue about how ballots are going to be marked, and we will get to that. I know, John, you can go on in great detail, and I want you to do that today, and Steve, I will need your expert commentary. As far as I'm concerned, you and Bob and John, the three of you, John Brakey, Steve Rosenfeld, and Bob Fitrakis, are the three really leading experts with the deepest knowledge and activist credentials here to deal with this all-important issue. I don't think it's ever been more important since we have Satan himself in the White House, at least Satan's left-hand man, who is capable of completely destroying the earth and ending American democracy, and who will be running for election, I won't call it re-election, in 2020. And it's all going to turn on how these ballots are cast and counted. As Joe Stalin said, right, it matters not who casts the ballot, it only matters who counts them. And John Brakey, I'm going to let you go, and Steve, then you'll follow up. You have just lost a major court case in Florida about the counting of the preservation of electronic ballot images. So tell us all about this, please. Don't hold back. And then, Steve, I'll ask you to follow up. So, John, tell us about this court case. Tell us what's at stake. Tell us what the judge decided, and then tell us what you're going to do.
Well, thank you. Well, the case was about something very simple, because when we do cases, we break them down to the very simple fact And the case was, does a digital scanner produce a ballot image, and or does it not? They were claiming that they didn't turn that feature on, okay? And that was the heart of the case.
John, who is they?
Yeah, we sued the state of, we sued the Secretary of State. We sued the counties in Florida that were not doing it right. There's 60 some counties in Florida, and we sued 16 of them. 20 of them we didn't know. The rest of them were doing it right. And what they were doing right is that these ballot images is what is used to count the vote. As the ballot goes into the machine, it takes a picture of the ballot. That picture instantly is used to go ahead and decide how people voted by creating a cast vote record. And they were destroying that record. And to make it sound simple how to understand this, is that the first case we did in Pima County, I had a Judge Gordon say, he asked Pima County, his attorney, if you take a voted ballot and you were to photocopy that voted ballot, and then you were use the photocopy to count the vote, what makes you think you can throw it away? You can't. It's in the chain of custody. And so that was what the fight was. We lost the case on a technicality because the other side did not want us to get that far, and they found a loophole in the law that, and the court, I want you to know, the court said this in their decision before they dismissed the case. In short, while the court is sympathetic to the plaintiff's claims, Section 20701, which is a federal act, does not provide for a private right of action. It's up to the feds to enforce this. It's not the citizens who can do that. And so he was sympathetic. And that act was what the case was based on. And so we weren't defeated. We were loopholed out. And we're coming back with another strategy, which I don't want to go into detail here or anything. But we're real happy. And I think that Steve will probably do a better job explaining about how I cannot be so upset and unhappy. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve to explain the other side.
Okay. So,
Bob Fitrakis, have you called in, Bob? No. Okay. Go ahead, Steve. Please.
Okay. So let's step back and draw a landscape for your listeners. Okay. So
yes.
So across the country, there's several dozen types of different systems that are used to count votes and to record votes and count votes. And it used to be that, and the laws, for example, that have to do with what's a public election record, just like a government document. And what's, what can be saved and what cannot be saved and how long can it be saved for, were written in the era when computers didn't really exist for any of this stuff. So what you had was, in 1962, the Civil Rights Movement, in the middle of that, Congress passed a law saying you have to keep all election records for 22 months, because basically what was happening was these southern states were finding ways to disenfranchise African Americans. So that's on the books. And, you may recall, in Ohio in past years, you and Bob were involved in going to court, because what you found was that different local counties were not saving the election records. Now, why would they do that? Well, there's a lot of reasons.
The question answers itself, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah, so there's a lot of reasons. Well, you can be more specific. You can say they might want to hide the flaws in their machinery. They might want to hide that they're trying to help somebody win an election. They might want to hide, other forms of ineptness or this or that. It doesn't matter. So what happens is, if you fast forward to, our century, and what happens is you have these laws on the books that have to do with, what is a public record? And the reason public records matter in elections is most of the time people really don't care about, what's going on with the voting until it's super close and it's too late. And what I mean by too late is you have these other laws on the books that give a certain window, a certain number of days with which you have to count and verify stuff. And some, and you know, and you have these stages after Election Day where people don't realize that not every state and not every county handles this the same way. So what happens is, what John has been working on is he's seen some of like the best new technologies find a really efficient and really granular way to account for every vote cast pretty much on paper ballots before local election offices and boards declare the winners. And it involves these digital snapshots of ballots. And there are different types of images, and some are better than others, but let's not go there right now. The point is that you can have a more granular and a fuller accounting than ever before. And that's possible if only, first of all, these images are safe, these digital records are considered the same as paper records and just kept. Now, you would think that this would be like a 101 lesson in civics. And you would think that, every newspaper in America would, or journalist organization would be in court fighting for this stuff, because what is more fundamental to the practice of journalism than public records? And what is more fundamental as a public record than ballots and voting? But that's not the case. So that's not the case. So what's happened in Florida is last year, some of these counties were saving these records, and some of them were not. And John went to court to try to, basically win the right to have a uniform standard, which is that things that are digital, that have to do with voting, must be preserved just like the paper.
Okay, and, Steve, let me jump in here. Wait, yes. Steve, let me jump in right here, because I want, this is exactly the moment where I wanted to bring in Bob. Now, Bob's online, and he has to go to do another show. So specifically, John and Steve have introduced the landscape here for this lawsuit in Florida. And Steve is explaining the basics here, but I wanted you, because you have to go, I wanted you to jump in and explain what happened in Wisconsin and Michigan, and why those suits were lost here, and how that is relevant to the lawsuit that has just been lost in Florida. You explained to me that it has to do with standing, and Steve will take up with you as soon as, when Bob is done. Okay, so Bob, can you talk about your week, because you were the representative of the Greens of Jill Stein in these critical cases in Michigan and Florida.
I was her counsel for her recount campaign. I was the general counsel for that. And Steve was doing a very good job of explaining the bases. And one of the things that that happened, particularly in Michigan, and this has happened elsewhere, it depends on whether you're suing under federal or state law, or whether the other side removes it to federal court. Because a lot of times you'll hear references to Article 3. Article 3 is the U.S. Constitution dealing with the judicial branch. So if you're suing in federal court or under federal law, even in state court, and that's a predominant question, what arises is whether or not you have standing. And a lot of that is left up to the states. And also a lot of it is approached often through the Public Records Act in a state. Here in Ohio, we approached it through state law. I worked with John Brakey. And in that case, they essentially said it's not a public record. It's up to each individual board of elections to decide whether or not to permanently store the image. So even though the image is being created when they're counting the ballots, is that it really was left up to each of the 88 county boards of election. So as Steve was pointing out, there's no uniformity Some counties keep them, some don't. And the other thing is, in Michigan, the standing issue was raised when Jill Stein, I mean, it was within 10,000 votes in Michigan. I think a recount of the entire state instead of a quarter of the state may have delivered it. But what the court said, the federal court, and then the state Supreme Court was involved as well, but ultimately the federal court said Jill didn't get enough votes to alter the outcome of the election. And usually all it takes to be as a candidate on the ballot because of to get standing. But in this case, they said, the courts, first the state Supreme Court, and then later adopted federal court, they said the only person really who has standing here should be Hillary Clinton. And the problem, of course, is Hillary Clinton did not challenge the election through a recount.
Yeah,
she passed on that opportunity.
Yeah, okay, so, Steve, jump in.
Yeah, so let me just go back and go back to like a bigger picture here. What we're talking about here is what's going to happen if we have in the 2020 election, and I'm talking just about the presidential election now, but this is true of any close and tight election. If you move to this recount counting phase, and all of a sudden, you know, the time is short, and the question is, what evidence do you have of who's the real? This all goes very, very much to what do you trust? And it goes to the legitimacy of the election. And we know that there's a guy right now in the White House who, even before he was elected president, saying it was going to be stolen if it wasn't him. And since he's been elected, he's been saying crazy stuff like millions of Californians are voting illegally. And his supporters are putting out these memes last month saying, internet stuff saying Department of Homeland Security has found 12 million uncounted votes for Trump. You know, and so against this backdrop of craziness, the question becomes, where's the evidence? And what everybody is talking here is what everybody's talking about here is that as we use more and more of this digital technology, which scans these paper ballots, and a digital image is made. It's the most granular public record apart from the paper itself that one can have. And you can use smart software to very expeditiously figure out, you know, where the problem ballots are and try to independently, you know, verify or do a second count to see if the first one was right. You can really be efficient about this stuff. So this litigation by John and these lawsuits by Bob in Ohio and other places has really been about putting a better evidence trail in a process that's going to be under attack from some of the key people in it. And this is what this is all about. And I'm just sort of saying, when we talk about these details, this is really the big picture, you know. And what happens is, in state by state, you do have uneven procedures and uneven deadlines, and it's looking, if we're headed into this kind of climate in 2020 where it's going to come down to recounts in swing states, it's not going to be a pretty picture.
Right. And let me ask, so Bob, since you have to go, and Steve, that's very well stated, the question of standing, which is what decided John's case in Florida, it's astounding to me that in the state of Michigan, and tell me if this is a federal or state judge, said that even though Jill Stein was a legitimate candidate, the only way she had standing was if she could have won. Is that right?
Yes. If she had enough votes that a recount could have influenced the total where she could have won. But there's other factors involved. For example, the Green Party. I was granted standing in 2012 to intercede in the courts, both at the federal and the state level. But part of that is in Ohio, you had to get 3% of the vote statewide in order to stay on the ballot as a Green. And remember, there's a 5% threshold standard for a third-party candidate, the so-called 5% solution, where you can end up with more matching funds if you get 5% of the vote. So,
is that state or federal?
Usually, remember, the state of Ohio, both you and Steve know this, gave David Cobb a write-in candidate standing in the 2004 election. So very unequal application depending on whether you're federal, state court, or in both. In Michigan, it was the attorney general of the state that called into question Jill Standing, and that was supported by the Michigan Supreme Court, causing the federal court to really reverse itself and agree that there was no reason to go on with a reelection. While it wouldn't have influenced Jill's race, it clearly could have made Hillary Clinton the winner in Michigan.
Where is it? Where is the basis in law that judge comes down and says, if you can't win, you don't have standing? Where's the law on that? Where's the code or the common law on that?
Harvey.
I mean, it seems to me like the court just pulled that out of the air. And Bob, I know you have to go. Is there anything else you want to add in?
No, just keep up the good work, and it's nice working with you guys.
Okay, thank you so much, Bob Fitrakis. That was very, very helpful.
I
want to know where in the code of the United States election law does it say that if you can't win, you don't have standing to demand a recount? Where do they pull that?
Harvey, this is Steve. After the 2016 recounts in Michigan and Wisconsin, those states which had Republican governors and Republican majority legislatures passed legislation saying that you could make anybody ineligible to file for a recount who couldn't make a good faith showing that they stood a chance of winning. And in Michigan,
oh my God,
they increased the fees as well. So, the Constitution lets states, you know, regulate their elections. So it is in law, and it is in statute, and it's actually been one of the, an example of blowback from 2016. So, you know, now there are other things in those states that are happening, and, some of it's good, some of it's bad. Or some of it makes it harder, or is more of a deterrent to actually having candidates file. But to go back to what's going on with John, is, and this litigation, and I'm not as down on this decision or as discouraged by it as someone like John is, because he's put more heart and soul into it. Because
John actually seems very happy about it, but we'll get back to that in a minute.
Yeah, but what's happening here is you. John is right. The judge could have, the judge, some of these times these legal decisions are like listening to a Sunday preacher. And depending on what the conclusion they want to draw, they will cite different chapter and verse. And he could, this judge could have cited other chapters and verse to have ordered the state, these counties to do something and not destroy the stuff. I think that I know I sat in this judge's courtroom in November during other election-related litigation when basically people's ballots were being disqualified because their signatures didn't match on envelopes and on their driver's license when they voted by mail and stuff like that, and there was no way for them to have a way back in to fix that. And this judge ordered those fixes, and he was very viciously attacked as being an Obama appointee. So there might have been some politics in this, too, because this was an easy decision for him to duck. And one reason that it's easy for him to duck, and this is what goes back to what I think is the silver lining here, is that there's legislation moving in Florida that would allow these kinds of digital ballot images and these audit systems to be used in recounts. And it's semi under the radar. And it's probably going to pass, if people are smart about just letting it go through. And Florida has a weird culture of election officials, where the the officials at the county level don't want more black eyes like what happened after, 2000 and the Bush v. Gore decision. So they have a bit of a history of sort of pushing for things sometimes against their state, their state election agency, because they want things to make their jobs appear more credible and the results more legitimate. And that's kind of what's going on. And if that's the case, and I think it's going to be the case, by the way, that this thing gets passed, Florida, of all places, even though they're trying to stop, this felon reenfranchisement law from, bringing, hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of more new voters into the process because it's a Republican-run state, even though they're doing other stuff that you would call anti-voter, like pushing back when people can actually mail in ballots to sort of stop a last-minute surge at the finish line, if this goes through, this will make Florida have the most transparent and granular recounts of any presidential swing state. There would be nothing else like it. And, every indication is that it's going to be super tight in 2020. And so what John Suit has done is it lost the battle, but they're poised to win the war. And it's put people on notice that, this kind of record, when you get into the nitty-gritty, it goes to the nitty-gritty because this is what, litigation becomes, is in play. And I'm just telling you that I have been told flat out that if that bill passes, they're going to have to go and create rules. And they're going to have to force the manufacturers to turn over stuff that no activists have been able to get, which is like these encrypted files and the keys to their systems. And they're going to do it and the state of Maryland just did that, they have a precedent. So these images, if all that is happening, how can they not claim that digital images of ballots are public records? This other, it's almost like it's just an afterthought. But what happens in law is if you don't explicitly say you have this right, then people will fight about it and reactionary judges will rule against you. And that, you see that in civil rights law. That's how states like Kansas are so incredibly discriminatory against, gay and lesbian and LGBT rights. It's by omission, not by explicit, mentioning it. So it is discouraging that, this lawsuit got thrown out because some counties did destroy their records. But if you look down the line, if this thing passes, the arc of history is bending in the right way.
Uh-huh. It certainly is. Well stated, Steve.
John, you can weigh in.
If I could just jump in here for a few minutes.
Well, wait. John, you got it.
Go ahead, Bob.
Hold on, John, let Steve finish, and then we got plenty of time. We got a whole half hour left. So, John, Steve, you want to finish? And then I want to say something, and John, you've got the floor.
What I'm trying to do is, your listeners and people who are listening to this stuff gets so granular so fast that it's really easy to get lost. So I'm just trying to, keep going back to these bigger picture themes, and what's the theme here? It's like, we got crazy people out there who are going to lie about every single election result. So we need to be able to point to evidence for the smaller number of people who might actually want to believe it. And so we can have a legitimate process and get back to a political culture where people may not like the results, but they can agree that, this is what happened. Instead of living in these alternative realities. And the evidence here for in the way a modern, vote counting gets done in America involves digital records, because even if you're using paper, the tabulation, the counting, is done using digital analytics. It comes from analyzing, it's no different than people going to an airport and flashing a barcode on, on their boarding pass, and getting on a plane. So,
okay. All right. So let me lay this out, and then John and Steve, that's brilliant. Thank you. And and you're going to stay with us, of course. So here's John. I'm going to turn it over to you in a second. So here's our what I see is the situation. We are having a generational change in the voting machines that are being used and in the way we cast ballots. After the fiasco of 2000, the Congress voted billions of dollars for the Help America Vote Act. A generation of touchscreen machines was put on. It was an utter catastrophe. As Ronnie Duggar said to me in the Columbus City Council, where the hearings were being held, and after 2004, that these electronic machines were perfectly designed to steal elections. Now we have a new generation of machines coming in. These machines allow you to go to the polls. You press a button, and you get a ballot, which is actually extremely important in a place like Los Angeles, where you have 14 legitimized languages in which people can vote. So a computer that can spit out a computerized paper ballot that you will fill out is of great importance, actually. It's significant here because the election boards have a hard time stocking sufficient paper ballots to cover Tagalog and all the other languages that are used here. So you get this computer-generated paper ballot. You fill it out, and there's a discussion of that, of course, whether it's going to be filled out with a screen or just by hand, and we, I think, all agree that we prefer it by hand. You feed the ballot back into the machine. It takes a ballot image, a digital image of the ballot, and then the ballot goes out into a bin. The actual ballot goes back into a bin on the other side. So you have in the computer a visual digital image of the ballot, and you have the paper ballot preserved. The machine then reads the digital image of the ballot and gives us the result of the election. That can be challenged now if the ballot images are preserved and if the paper ballots are preserved. Now, what's happening is, now my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, and when I get to you, is that the machine can't work unless the ballot images are actually taken. The question is, are the ballot images to be preserved? And we have precincts and counties which, for some godforsaken reason, are not preserving the digital images, which makes absolutely no sense unless you're trying to steal an election. But if this system and these ballot image machines are now spreading across the country to the point where about 80%, John, you'll tell us the percentages. A big percentage of the country is now going to be using machines, and a big percentage of the country will be preserving those images, but some of the places don't preserve the image. And your lawsuit in Florida was to require that the precincts and the counties abide by federal law, which, as Steve mentioned, was passed in 62, saying that all the materials from an election by federal law have to be preserved for 18 months, or is it 20, after the election. So what we're really asking here, what your suit really asks, is that the counties and the precincts abide by federal law and preserve these images. Now, what the judge in Florida said is that for some reason you don't have standing. But what the heck? This is federal law. Okay, so have I, John, knock yourself out now. Have I stated this correctly? And please correct me if I'm wrong. And what do you want to say?
Well, the most part, you're right. I mean, first off, let's deal with, we just brought in the LA system, which the LA system is a lot different than these ballot marking devices that that ESNS and Dominion have, okay? The LA system, let's start off with, is an open source system. That's one. Two, when you vote on their machine, it prints out a ballot. It prints out a cast vote record, really, which is your decision. You walk it and put it into a digital scanner that makes a copy. And, yeah, I prefer a hand-marked paper ballot. But, you know, there are 17 different languages. And it is, you know, so I feel this way, is that a lot of good people have worked hard to put this thing together. They're committed to it. Now, let's just make sure the open source is good, that the ballot images are public records right away, and that we go forward. But these devices in the other part of the country, they're not open source. The gold standard is hand-marked. When you talk about statistics, in the 2020 election, you know, first off, the 2016 in California, I believe that you guys were only like 15% digital, maybe 10. By 2020 election, the state of California will be 95% digital. Of that, it will almost all be, with it, the exception of L.A., but L.A. still will have a huge marked of hand-marked ballots because 60% of the people in California are voting by mail, and they will be mailed a ballot that they'll put a human mark on it, okay? And then if you show up at a precinct in L.A. With this new system, you know, Mimi Kennedy is a good friend. She's been on that commission a long time and has fought. And, you know, and so they are where they are. Yes, it would be better if it was hand-marked, but it's not be. But nationally, and Steve's more qualified in these numbers, I believe that 75% of the country by 2020 will still be hand-marking their ballots. The other 25% will not. And of that 75 to 85% that will be digital, you know, are all going to have ballot images. And what we work for is we work to make elections transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. One of the worst things that I see going on in this country, and Steve writes about this, and I thank him for his writings, and it made me really think about it, is that on election night, when they tell you that the results are unofficial, the only reason the results turn official, usually 10 days to get later, it's not because they audited, not because they checked anything. It was because it was a deadline, and it's like somebody waved their finger and said, now it is official. And that's the result. Maryland is the only state that does 100% audit, okay? If you go back to these other counties and you ask them, oh, how can you do that? How do you know everything is right? And they look at you and say, are you a conspiracy theorist? Don't you know that we run a Volkswagen, Toyota, I mean, you know, Volkswagen logic and accuracy, like an emission test that passed in our country 2 million times while it was putting up 40 to 80% over the level? It's the same thing. If they do a recount, they let you look at the unders and the over votes. Okay? How many votes are there? They might find a couple because somebody, you could show where they voted by circling the name rather than that. But the reality is zero times zero is zero. If, and I say big if there's a fraction magic program working in the background, it's going to work where the real votes are, okay? Because that's where you steal. It's like, why did you rob the bank? It's because that's where the money was, okay? That's where I wanted bigger money, and that's where the bigger numbers. And the bigger numbers in places I fear is places like Broward County, Cook County, Chicago, L.A., you know, big, huge centers that are not very transparent. And L.A. is trying to make an attempt to turn that around. So I'm not willing to shoot at their experiment, but I'm closely watching it and wanting to learn from it because I don't want to be a technophobe either, okay? And okay. There are things coming down the line. So I try to keep an open eye and work on this stuff, but I'll say this. Having a hand-marked paper ballot is the first thing part of the chain of custody is important.
Okay, Steve, can you characterize for us the percentage of votes that we expect in the 2020 election to be cast on digital scanning machines?
Well, yeah, here's what it is. You know, what I have been told by people who I respect as authorities in this, is that, you know, somewhere between, you know, something like 75 or 80% of the country is going to be using some form of what is called a paper ballot. And when I say, and I'm not trying to sound squishy here when I say some form. So what do we mean by that? The vast majority of those will be the traditional, you know, ink marks, you know, hand-made ink marks on paper where people have to fill in ovals, or as the case is here in San Francisco, you have to connect one side of an arrow to another. And that goes through, then you put it into a machine, and you know, and it's scanned. And an image is made, and the image is read, and that's where the tabulation is. And usually what happens is people just assume that the scanning is correct. Now, there's the newest, you know, versions of this are, it's not a new technology. It's just the latest version of an old-style system is what they call a ballot marking device. And it does exactly like what it sounds. The ballot is marked by a computer rather than a person. And there are some different versions of this. And the reasons that this is done is because, well, there are several. You know, this is seen as being a very efficient way for people to use touch screens, and there's been, you know, people tend to like that. At least that's, you know, what's been reported in surveys. And they don't really give too much thought to what happens next. From an election official standpoint, when a machine makes that printout, it removes the ambiguity in litigation of having to fight over interpreting, well, what did this person really mean? Because sometimes on ink marked ballots, you have X's, things are crossed out, and people are sloppy with pens, and that people end up fighting about all that kind of stuff. In fact, those were the fights in the Al Franken recount fight, you know, with Norm Coleman, that they went through ballot by ballot by ballot and determined that Al Franken had won that election. So these officials want to avoid all that. So you have this new generation of what's called ballot marking device machines, and what they do is they print out what can best be called a summary card. It's like a business envelope size piece of paper, a little bit longer if it's a longer ballot, that has a bunch of clusters of barcodes at the top, and it has the names printed below of the candidate choices, and the barcodes are encoding those choices. And it also has a separate electronic, you know, version of all that gets sent in, you know, to like a more central counting center. So 75% of the country, 85% of the country in 2020 is going to be using these, you know, either marking paper by hand or using a ballot marking device. And what the state of Maryland does is they basically take a look at the images produced on the scanners that are either looking at individual ballots that are marked by hand or that are produced by these ballot marking devices. And what they try to do is, well, they don't try to do this, they do this. They take a look at the results in every single race, and they try to figure out where there are unreadable ballots. You know, why is that the case? And can they take a closer look and try to assign the correct vote? So, for example, with those barcode printouts, they have some percentage is in the low single digits of unreadable barcodes. I'm not making that number up. That comes from the Maryland Department of Elections. It's a higher, you know, unreadable rate than actually trying to interpret ink marks on paper. So they then take a look at the, you know, what was printed below, and on a computer at the desk, they say, okay, this person meant to vote for this person in this election, and we're going to assign that vote next. And they try to go through that. And the same thing, they do the same thing, by the way, with these, you know, what you would call like the sloppiest marks on paper, where somebody, for some reason, doesn't fill in an oval but circles it, or makes an X, or signs their name, or does something, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. So the thing is, to the greatest extent possible, they try to have a second independent count that they compare to the first count. And then they look to see how accurate that all is. And then they figure out, can we officially declare winners, or do we have to go to a more detailed and litigious, you know, process? Because recounts can be followed by election challenges and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So that's what they're doing. And it's really very, very simple. You know, you don't trust a single system. You double-check it because the stakes are high. And why don't officials want to do this in a lot of places? It's because they basically say, well, we were using one system that's certified. Isn't that good enough? And they're also completely overwhelmed with these timetables and these windows that were written, you know, decades ago, before, you know, half their state, you know, or half their county voted by mail. And they've got a mountain of paper they got to process. Or they've got these provisional ballots where people's names weren't on, you know, the poll in poll books because somebody, you know, didn't, because it was basically lousy data processing around the voter registration systems. So there's a lot of resistance, you know, to taking the time to take a second look. And there's a lot of people, and a lot of times they wanted to do these things that are seen as more efficient administratively. You know, barcodes are appealing if you don't have to spend the time interpreting, you know, like sloppy ink marks. On the other hand, you know, on the other hand, the question is, how accurate can this stuff be? And, you know, and who can actually try to game the system from the inside? And this is where an individual's ink mark on paper is absolutely the best choice because you know, computer viruses don't attack paper and ink. But secondarily to that, you know, it would take such sophistication on a large scale to be able to alter ballot images. Like, and there are people who don't like anything in computers in elections. But to be able to remake, you know, in Broward County, there were thousands of different ballot varieties because of all the local races. To be able to have, you know, done that to have, you know, taken the Senate race or the governor's race in that one county, you would have had to have recreated thousands of different ballot types, switched ovals, and somehow swapped it in with nobody looking in an environment where there's an insane amount of cybersecurity precautions because of the rough stuff. So, you know, I'm not saying this is like a foolproof system, but it's way, way, way better than anything we've had for years. And this is what John is fighting about. It's basically to preserve the core fundamental evidence trail in case we need to look at this. Most of the time, people don't care. But believe me, when they do care, and you never know which elections those are going to be, you want to be able to know this is there. And that's what this is all about.
John
said. Yeah, I just want to add one thing, is that what we do is that we're impunity busters, and we want to take away the impunity of a hacker. To have impunity means that you'll know that you won't get caught. Because getting a recount is almost impossible. They know that there is no audits. They know how to game the system. And we want to take that power away. Hopefully, Florida will wind up with a system that they'll have what I call two Wizards of Oz. Both don't like each other. And they're counting to verify. And then the people will be able to get those records and also verify, leaving very room for a hacker to get in, especially when you're talking about paper and ink, as Steve just said. And that's the excitement. And can't win all the battles, but I know one thing. I'm more enthused now than I did before I entered Florida, because Florida helped me find a lot of stuff and showed me a lot of things that we can use now in other states. So we're going to stay in Florida, working to look at these bills and see what we're going to do, talking to the Secretary of State, because we have a new Secretary of State there that she certainly deserves a nice letter from us saying, hey, we're not dropping out. We're excited about the bills that are going on and moving on that way. And then we're going to file some records requests in certain counties and find out if we've changed your attitude about preserving, because they now know, like in Orange County, Florida, they said, gee, we have DS-200s, and they work like optical scanners because we turned that feature off. Well, now he knows that that's impossible, and I don't know where he got his information, but it was wrong. And so we'll records request them, and we'll look for some friendly courts that, if necessary, that will go in at the state level. Once again, on a very simple thing, Mandamus Act, you know, you need to follow the law, and here it is, and we might use an election beforehand. It saves us money because that's a firewall. If you let them have their time, they will depose you, they will motion you to death, they will run your lawyer fees up real high. And in public records requests, that's another thing. You don't need lawyers to do that, even though we'll have a team of lawyers overlooking, helping our people in Florida be able to do that. So it's now off to Michigan, North Carolina, We got a lot of swing states to worry about because we definitely want to be see more states turn into, as Steve writes about, Maryland, and hopefully Florida is going to be something. Maybe 6 months from now, we're all going to look at and say, wow, what a nice model. Hey, Arizona, how about jumping on board? Because, you know, I always tell people, Arizona and Florida have a lot in common. One sold desert, the other one sold swampland. They're both started out with developers, okay, and a lot of games are played. And then just one thing to add is that, you know, the whole state of California, they just certified all their voting equipment. The whole state of California is getting ready to flip from digital, from optical. That's a good thing. And so, wow, what a big primary coming up next March. It's not June for California now. At the end, now they're going to be, Super Tuesday. Right, Steve?
Yeah. You know, Harvey, so much, you know, for years and years, nothing really changed. But now things are really changing. And it's hard to keep up with all of these things. And you know, I people are not exactly fans of some of the stuff that I write because it's not, I think the old narrative that you can't, that, you know, no computer is trustworthy, it's not helping anybody, you know, it's not going to, if you just keep saying that, like a lot of people do, and it's easy to believe, you're not going to be invited or to sit at the table or be taken seriously at this stage right now when people are trying to figure out what's the best way to use all this new stuff, what's the best way to double-check all this new stuff. You know, this is really in play, and there are some states that are, you know, it's not a perfect science by any stretch, but things are in motion where there's a, you know, the state of the art in of this imperfect science is evolving, and if you know it, you know, some people are, you know, very few in the activist community, some like John are really looking to see, you know, what can be done. So at the end of the day, you know, you've got a process where here's the checklist, here's what can be done, here's how you get from the starting line to the finish line, and here's what you need along the way, as opposed to just these stop signs and these vast pronouncements that might feel good, you know, but ultimately, you know, they're cynical because, you know, the stakes.
Okay, so here's what would feel good is, first of all, Steve, we're almost near the end, unbelievably. Steve Rosenfeld, how do people get a hold of you and see your stuff?
Well, it's on a bunch of different websites, but, you know, if you go to the Independent Media Institute, there's a whole, it's a project called Voting Booth. And they named it, and it's, stuff is listed there. You know, and the stuff I'm looking at is I'm trying to figure out how we can have the best evidence-based vote counting in 2020, and that also includes, by the way, what the Democrats are going to do in their first caucuses, because they're going to use online or telephone voting, and they've never used it before.
Oh my God, John Brakey, how do people get a hold of you?
Hey, the best way is. You know, my email is pretty simple, johnbrakey@gmail.com, my site. You can find me on Facebook at audit.usa. On the website, it's audit, www.auditelectionsusa.org. And, hey, you know, if you're in California, hey, we're focusing on California. Join our group. Ray Lutz is another, Citizens Oversight, a guy I work with closely. A lot of good groups
okay.
in California. And so we need to get people involved as much as we can. So that's how you get a hold of me. And thank you, Harvey, for, you know, giving us a platform to come out here and talk about this stuff and all the years that you put into elections.
Yeah.
Well, we will send you a URL, and you can spread it around, make sure it gets heard.
Good.
But this is incredibly fascinating and, of course, important stuff. And I'm sure the KGB is listening in, and whoever else is going to try to get this upcoming apocalyptic. I don't think there's ever been a more important election than 2020. People always say that, of course, but four more years of this guy, and you know, you can say goodbye to our country and our species. So I'm looking forward to hand marking a paper ballot that will go into a machine that will create a digital image that will preserve my hand counted paper, my hand marked paper ballot. And then that the images will provide the initial vote count, the official vote count, and if there's a question, they can always go back to the paper ballot, and I hope that the biggest possible percentage of votes counted, cast and counted, in the 2020 election can be done that way. I understand a lot will be mailed in. We're going to have to really scrutinize the mail-in dimension and hope that there's a way to protect against fraudulent ballots, which I'm sure somebody is going to try to do. And we'll have to talk at a future date about how to guarantee that these mailed-in ballots are valid. Steve and John, thank you. Bob, thank you. We'll talk again. Keep up the great work.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.